Hey everybody, my name's John Fusco. I'm a producer-editor here at No Film School, and usually I'm behind the scenes on these podcasts, but last week at Tribeca Film Festival, I had the opportunity to sit down with several directors from the new horror anthology film, Holidays. As you can probably guess from the name, the anthology is comprised of 8 short films, each taking place on a different holiday. We talked about the benefits of the anthology format, why one would want to move from making blockbusters back to indie shorts, and the correct way to take advantage of working within the creative restraints of genre. Participating in the discussion are St. Patrick's Day director Gary Shore, Easter director Nicholas McCarthy, Mother's Day director Sarah Adina Smith, and New Year's Eve director Adam Egypt Mortimer. I hope you guys enjoy it. Hey guys, this is John Fusco with No Film School, and I'm here with 3 of the directors from the anthology film Holidays. 4 of the directors. Give us your name, tell us a little bit about yourself, and what brought, I guess, tell us what brought you to this endeavor, I suppose.
My name is Gary Shore. I directed St. Patrick's Day segment of Holidays. And I was approached by the guys in XYZ, Carl Frankie, got in touch. And asked me would I be interested in contributing to this mad hat scheme of things. So I said, count me in. It sounded interesting. And then, I wanted to pick St. Patrick's Day out of fear somebody else was going to do it. And then I kind of got stuck with it.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Adam Egypt Mortimer. I was invited to join the project by John Hegeman, who is the sort of mastermind producer behind it. He's been wanting to do this Holidays anthology for years and years and years. And I had worked with him on short film projects in the past. And after he saw my first feature, Some Kind of Hate, he invited me to be a part of his film that he was putting together and to do a segment, and then to also help him to produce it by looking for some of the talented filmmakers to get involved and helping to sort of figure out how it would work as a movie. And I directed New Year's, which is the last segment in the feature.
Now I have to do it. I have to say all my names, all 3 of them.
Do them.
I am Sarah Adina Smith.
Very nice.
God damn it. And I directed Mother's Day, and Adam was the one who brought me on this awesome project, and I chose Mother's Day because I don't know why I chose it, actually. I think it was the Midnight Swim was very much about, because I'm a lady.
Yeah.
That's it. It's because I have a mother and because I'm a lady.
Wait, can we talk about the trending middle name use?
Well, my name is Sarah Smith. I feel like I have no choice. I feel like I was forced into 3 names against my will, and I'm actually much more comfortable as a 2-name person, and I think it's caused a lot of anxiety in my life.
I went to a high school with a girl named Sarah Smith.
So what the fuck am I supposed to do?
That's crazy. How could there possibly have been a woman named Sarah Smith?
Yeah. It's like meeting another John in the world.
Yeah.
So. And
Nicholas McCarthy, and I wrote and directed Easter, and I got involved with it because XYZ, which is the company that was helped put this together, I had worked with on a feature I made called At the Devil's Door, so they knew they could get me cheap.
So I guess for Adam, how did you go about like finding, did you know all of the directors you had in mind when you were asked to help produce this?
So the only specific directors that I brought in was Sarah, whose movie Midnight Swim, when I was at Fantasia Film Festival 2 years ago, we went there to show a work in progress of my first movie, and I saw Midnight Swim, and it really blew me away. I loved the movie, and I was like, how can I work with a? It's interesting when you, like, you want to work with people, but you don't really know how what you can do with them. But right at that time, I was being invited to get involved with an anthology film, and I was like, this is perfect. I'm gonna call her up and see if she can be a part of this thing. And then also Dennis and Kevin, who wrote and directed Valentine's Day and wrote my segment, were also people that I had seen Starry Eyes, and I was really interested in working with them. But as Nick and Gary both said, XYZ was a partner on the project, and they are an incredible resource for filmmakers. And so they brought us Gary, they brought us Nick, they brought us a guy named Anthony Scott Burns, who did Father's Day. I would have never have even heard of him if they hadn't suggested him. and Kevin Smith. They worked with Kevin Smith. And we had a friend, Ryan Turek, who's working at Blumhouse now, and he suggested we work with Scott Stewart, who made Christmas and made a VR version of it too, which was cool. Okay. So there was a number of different people, you know, sort of thinking about like, what's a great filmmaker we could bring in and get involved? And, you know, so that led to this kind of rogues gallery.
So how do young aspiring filmmakers sort of go about making that sort of attention grabbing work or work that you're interested in? Anyone can answer that.
Well, you know, this Easter short was kind of a homecoming for me in terms of, you know, I made many short films before I got to make features. And the last short that I had done before this one was called The Pact. And that ended up getting me my job to do my first feature. I didn't intend The Pact short to be a calling card or like a piece of what was supposed to be a larger film. It was actually that the company that ended up financing it believed that was the case. They saw it and they thought that because the movie had a very ambiguous ending, they thought that I had, you know, written an entire script. And so when they asked me, I lied to them and I said that there was a script and then I went and wrote one. You know, I know a lot of people go about making films as a kind of, you know, proof of concept to get features made, and I think that's, you know, a reasonable way to get a movie made. But in my own experience, I think what got me my first job directing a feature was that I had made a short that actually worked as a short, and in that movie, The Pact, kind of evoked a certain sense of fear. And so these guys said, this guy can direct a horror film. And so I was more than happy to go back and try another horror story in short form, because it's a challenge, you know. But one that when horror shorts work, they're magic.
I kind of want to flip the question around to Gary, because I feel like you know, a lot of the rest of us had made like really small indie, you know, feature films in this kind of like genre, you know, festival circuit world. And you come from like a really kind of different background where you had made like a huge movie and like big commercials and things like that. And then wanting to be a part of something that, you know, is like really quite a small movie. I mean, I think there was probably an aspect of that was that you could kind of do anything you wanted creatively, if not budgetarily. But can you just talk about sort of like moving into, you know, a little independent film after the stuff that you had done.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. Any questions you guys have for each other? But yeah. So what was the draw from going from a giant blockbuster back to a kind of a crazy short for you?
Back, because I don't know enough about your background. Yeah, but you seem like a guy who hit the ground running on like really high profile stuff. You
know? No, I started off with There wasn't really a scope to be able to do this in Dublin, so I suppose really what I wanted to do was just music videos and commercials to figure out the tools. I didn't have any aspirations to make films until I felt like I knew how to use the tools, and because it's just such an expensive hobby to have, you know. And it's just, and then I had a really bad music video. I mean, there's many bad music videos. One particularly bad music video where we shot outdoors at night time and it was a total disaster. And I swore to myself after that I would only shoot indoors with a controlled space and controlled lights and a green screen. And I could do all my own artwork, all my own illustration, you know, matte paintings and stuff. So I just said, well, you know, you're only limited by your imagination. So put them in front of a green screen, do your own backgrounds and kind of go from there. And then, cut a long story short, I kind of got pigeonholed. When I got my break, it was based off of a proof of concept to take kind of like Japanese animation and apply it to live action, and did this thing with it. And I kind of got pigeonholed after that as being a visual effects guy, even though I went to film school, I specialized in directing. You know, that's all I wanted to do. I was able to, yes, demonstrate what a shot could look like by a storyboard, but like, you know, as David Fincher, you know, I remember reading an interview, says like, you know, directing isn't drawing a storyboard and showing it to the cameraman and saying, that's what I want. It's like, it's when the sun is going down, and this is Fincher's quote, but it was like, you said something like, when the sun is going down and you know you need to get 5 shots and you know you're only going to get 2 or 3, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what it is, just gambling, mm-hmm. you know. So going and doing a studio film, Dracula Untold started off as something that could have been, in my mind, you know, something where you were taking something like Braveheart and the soul of Braveheart and applying it to this really dark Eastern European history and tapping into that. And on a very kind of, I don't know, it was really inspired by, you know, Russian iconography and propaganda. And this very, very industrial style that you could apply, but that sort of language just doesn't apply to an action adventure movie for a studio. And just, you know, you get into the beginning of shooting, you're just like, this isn't really what I pitched, you know, this isn't really what I thought it would be. So you go and you do something that's like action adventure, it doesn't really give you the tool set to test yourself, I think, as a director. I think testing yourself is in horror, and it's in thriller when it's at its most purest, simplistic form. It's atmosphere, and I wanted to get back to basics after having done something where I don't think action adventure and horror mix. I don't think it mix well at all. You know, you're gonna end up with something that's, you know, like, plenty of people wanted it there, but it's like the Mummy, or, you know, with Dracula. But when the opportunity came up to do this, I wanted to go back to writing anyway. So, you know, I said, this is the perfect opportunity. Go back, start small again. You know, at the end of the day, it's about trying to be a storyteller. No matter what budget you have, and you're still gonna have the same limitations and same challenges. And what better way to do it in a very supportive environment where you're given, you know, complete creative freedom, and you're also challenged by a bunch of great filmmakers around you that you go, like, you know, I have a lot to try and prove here, mm-hmm. you know, and prove to myself and prove elsewhere. So, you know, use this as a springboard to go and you know, then write a feature, and then, you know, maybe produce a feature. And it's all about control. It's stacking up those elements that will give you that creative control down the line. I think you spend your 20s and 30s just earning the right to be able to say where you want to put a camera, and then, you know, hopefully when you hit your 40s, it's just like,
I gotta wait till I hit 40. Great. Yeah.
I think we're in purgatory until then.
So I'll throw this question to Sarah. We were talking about, it seems like a common sort of denominator for all of you guys within filmmaking is sort of these challenges that you're faced with and then you have to embrace or adapt to meet. Mm-hmm. What were some of the challenges you faced with Mother's Day? Yeah, and also, I mean, we also talk about, you know, we throw around the term aesthetic a lot, but, like, you definitely have an aesthetic, you all have aesthetics in your films. What were you trying to, like, how did the challenges inform your aesthetic, I guess?
That's an interesting, complicated question. Well, so maybe if I start talking about the challenges, the answer will emerge.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, we had all kinds of challenges. Chiefly that I was like trying to make on this tiny budget in 3 days, this like very ambitious movie with like a lot more characters than I think I probably should have for the budget. So I like that. For me, I'm very excited when the task feels impossible. I think it was Jacques Cousteau who said like impossible missions are the only ones worth undertaking, which I really like. I think it pushes you to strive further and like be better than you thought you could possibly be, and everybody around you too, to like rise to the challenge. We had so many of them. Like the very first day, our entire truck of equipment was like 8 hours late. So we had a camera, luckily, so we could start shooting, but like we were just like missing all of our gear.
What kind of camera did you have?
We shot on the Epic.
Okay.
Yeah. What other challenges? It was December and cold, and I wanted everyone to be naked in the water, which is hard, and also like not get electrocuted with all the lights and stuff. Time, I think, was the biggest challenge for this one, because it was just quite ambitious, and we were really fighting the desert light. The days were quite short in December, and so I think we hadn't anticipated how quickly we would lose the light. And on our last day, like, we almost didn't finish the movie. It was so fucking insane, and we were just, you know, like, one take of everything, and I'm just like, you go into battle mode, which was some of the most exciting time. And I love that what Gary said, because that's when you're at your best and you're making quick decisions and you're making, you know, in split second, trying to make the best possible decision for the story, given the fact that you have 30 seconds to, like, you know, call the shot. And so we were on the final shot of my movie. It was sort of, you know, technically kind of difficult to pull off. And the sun was rapidly going down. And so every take we were like losing two stops, and we were just like fighting the light till the very last minute. And then we all collapsed and yeah.
And had a wedding.
Oh yeah, we had a wedding. Yeah. We threw a wedding on top of making a film. My producer got married on set.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
It was a last minute decision. So she had been engaged to her husband, who's also a horror director, actually. Daniel Stamm, and they were sort of dreading having to actually throw a wedding. They just wanted to be married. And Jen LaFleur, one of our actresses, is an officiant. And when they found that out, I think we decided like 24 hours before, and Jonica said, just bring some rings and come to the desert. And then the art department like repurposed the set and did this like beautiful line of candles out into the middle of the desert. And the costume department like dressed them in these like beautiful costumes. And it was, there was a meteor shower as soon as like they started saying their vows. It was the most magical moment.
So Nick, what are some of the benefits of like shooting within the genre? It seems like you have a pretty lengthy horror resume. So what do you think are just any genre, I'd say, what are the benefits of sticking to sort of that genre and rolling with the themes that sort of are a part of filmic history, I guess?
Right. Well, you know, I think people who like genre films, and I'm someone who likes genre films, like, it becomes this, that there's this interest in looking at all the different elements and how a particular element will come in play for, you know, one kind of horror film, and then it'll disappear in another. And there's a certain almost gamemanship that starts to happen with audiences because they're pretty sophisticated. And in some ways, you know, the really successful horror films that we kind of know will often do everything different except for, you know, one thing. You know, an example of that would be, you know, The Exorcist, you know, which is a movie that was done so realistically. And by kind of forging its own style that was completely outside of the genre, it invented something new for that genre, you know? And so I think in some ways that becomes the goal. You know, like I just wrote this vampire movie and there was a number of vampire movies that I watched as I was writing it. Gary's was one of them. And the horror action adventure film. And that character, the vampire, if you sat and you watched 20 vampire films, you know, starting with Nosferatu, and like, you know, watched the Universal Dracula series, and you watched the Hammer movies, and you watched, you know, some of the rarest and most obscure, you know, vampire movies, like the movie that I watched once was called Defula, and it was an all sign language vampire movie that I saw at the Museum of Modern Art. All these films have at least one thing in common. But the character of the vampire is in each of those films is different. It comes down to them drinking blood, really.
It was a vampire film made in the 80s, and Dracula comes back and he plays in the World Snooker Championships.
Amazing.
And I think that was probably
a UK specific film.
Yeah. Completely original in its genre, but I think they had the same idea.
When I watched enough of those films, I realized that, you know, that character kind of stood in for how I like to experience, you know, genre, in that there's something that you're promising an audience, and it becomes almost like this erotic game that you have, where you're going to, you know, give the audience one thing and maybe surprise them with another. And so I've always liked that, you know, like aesthetically, that experience of, for me, just as an audience member, to have my expectations thwarted and then have others met. Somehow, you know, that kind of mix of the familiar and the surprising is you know.
You're basically talking about like, like genre is the like prostate pinky poke of this of your cinematic aesthetic experience, in a way.
We'll talk about that afterwards. When the microphone is off. But yeah, I mean, it's like I think again, it's that idea of gamemanship. You know, it's like, and it's. We've watched so many films since we were young that it becomes ingrained in us. You know, and it's actually one of the reasons that I love short films is because then there are no rules. It's harder to make a successful short film than a successful feature, and that's why like when you go to a film festival, especially like a really good film festival like Tribeca or you know Sundance, when you see the shorts programs. Those shorts that you see that are the best are usually like some of like the best pieces of cinema that you'll see, you know, all year.
I think one thing you're saying, which is true, is that you kind of, because there's so many movies now in the world, you kind of have the choice whether to be the kind of the director that takes it all in and responds to what's out there or to just like shut it all out. And I think I'm the latter. Like I prefer not to sort of respond to the great mass of the history of cinema just because it's so overwhelming to me. And I'm so behind. Like I still haven't seen Jaws, you know, so I just like, fuck it. I'm just not going to worry.
It's a good movie.
But, you know, in a previous interview, someone was asking about like what films do you look at for influences for your film, and I think I choose to just not work that way, just because I think, which maybe is, you know, could be.
Do you work from like some sort of influence, like books or maybe like pictures or?
Yeah, like well, like my research process is like a lot of like time on the internet.
Yeah,
like, the internet. Sure. Like, yeah, I certainly like
a you modern know, filmmaker. Yeah,
yeah, immerse myself in different forms of research and music and imagery for sure. But I think that. You know, there's a very valid way of filmmaking where you look at what has been done in the genre, what's come before me, and how can I do something a little bit different as well, which I think is just a different approach. Maybe that's one of the ways we're different too.
And I mean, I think Gary, in your movie, you know, spoiler alert, you have this reference to Rosemary's Baby, and it's this, you know, it's this moment in that movie that's so brilliant because that's the moment you're actually sending this message to the audience about what world you are in, you know. And I think in a way, for me, you know, it doesn't come from, like when I conceived Easter, I didn't, the movie that I was most heavily referencing was a movie that I already made, which was the Pact short film, and it was a kind of autobiographical piece for that reason. But then, you know, there's always a danger, of course, of watching, having one kind of... art form being your primary influence, especially if it's the art form you're working in. But I think, you know, whatever you take in is what's going to come out.
I just don't like the pressure of, because there's nothing new under the sun, right? And I don't like the pressure of being like, I have to come up with something that's wholly original that hasn't been done before. I would rather just live in ignorance, not know what's been done before, and just make what I want to make. And then if it has, you know, natural...
try and do it well, keep it simple.
Yeah, just because otherwise it's too scary for me to have to, like, be responsible to the history of cinema and everything that's come before.
And the truth is, I think most of the time, you have an idea about what your movie is about, and then people receive it in another way. And in the limited experience I've had, like when I made that Pack short, I really thought like it had this ambiguous ending. It was about child abuse. I was like, it was this kind of fuck it movie where I was like, I'm just going to do this thing and put it on my credit card, and maybe this would be the last thing I'd ever make. And no one talked about the ambiguous ending or the fact that it was about child abuse. They all said the same thing to me, you know, when we showed it at Sundance. They all said that movie scared the shit out of me. And so I think at the end of the day, that's the thing that we, no matter where it comes from, is like, if it hits you in some way emotionally,
But what you're saying is really smart, because you can't necessarily aim at that target. It has to come from some other place.
You can't plan successes. You can't, and that's why, like, you know, it's like, you know, Adam and I last night were talking about Persona, the Bergman movie, and it's like, you know, Bergman made that film and then he made another movie a year later, and he had made a movie a year before that. Like, what are the masterpieces? Like, he didn't plan Persona as his masterpiece. You know, it's like, it was like, And that was always my, that was my goal, which I foolishly thought I could meet a few years ago, like after I made my first film. Like, you know, we made the pact. I finished it in early January and I was shooting my next film in November. And I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, even if it's making these fucking $500,000 movies, like one after the other, I was like, I'm employed. Like, some things will stick, some things won't. And, but where I went wrong is to think that the market would support my arrogance, to think that they would keep hiring me over and over to make the same thing.
So talking about the market, and we've like, we've hit on why shorts are a good form of film to, I mean, I guess as a filmmaker to sort of exploit, I guess. But why, what are the benefits of packaging all the short films together into an anthology, I guess, would be my question. Why choose that as a sort of outlet for these shorts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea behind this, and again, it was John who kind of cracked this code. He comes from a marketing background, right? So he is the person who was at Artisan when they released Blair Witch Project, who went out and sort of tried to convince everybody that it was real, right? Like, that was him as a marketing maniac. Like, that's, you know, so he approaches things from these kind of like sensational conceptual places. And the idea of having a horror movie with a number of different chapters on different holidays is that, like, everybody is going to have a favorite holiday. The movie will have a kind of immediate relevance all throughout the year, right? So if you put out like a Christmas movie, people might watch it every Christmas. If you put out holidays, there's, you know, every month you can go, oh, it's March, it's Mother's Day is coming up, or St. Patrick's Day is coming up, or, you know, what, like, it has this like constant relevance, which is interesting. And then it's a general enough concept that you can inspire all of these different filmmakers to have completely different takes on what it means while still having a conceptual coherence, you know, that has more of a conceptual coherence than something like ABCs of Death, because the alphabet isn't a concept. It's a tool. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Maybe I should show ABCs of Death to my 6-year old.
A woman did do that. A substitute teacher showed ABCs of Death at a school, and she was arrested.
Oh,
yeah. I think she hadn't watched it.
You should try it. I want someone to get arrested for showing holidays.
Yeah, that would be absolutely. That would be wonderful.
A huge trophy.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of got like a dual genre. Like, in that sense, it's like a dual genre film, because there's so many holiday films, you know, and then there's also horror film. So you're melding the two together, and I guess like hitting both audiences.
Yeah, I hope. Yeah, I think. I mean, there's so many more, you know, opportunities. There's so many more holidays, and you know, people like this movie, well, I'm sure we'll be doing more of them.
Well, great, guys. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us today. It was super informative, and congrats on the movie.
Thanks.
This was great. Appreciate it.
As always, be sure to subscribe to the No Film School podcast if you haven't already. Keep on rating and reviewing. And if you feel so inclined, you can follow me on the Twitter at @Jim_John_Jim. That's Jim, John, Jim. Indie Film Weekly will be back on Thursday, so be sure to listen to that. And until then, thanks for listening.